This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
Pitch Talk with Olivia Cox and Rachel Daly.
And now some of the less regular penalty takers have got to stand up and be counted. And I number amongst that list Gareth Southgate. And Kupka saved it!
This is Pitch Talk World Cup Edition on FUBAR Radio.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to the show. This is Pitch Talk. I'm Rachel. Olivia.
Hello.
How are we today?
I'm really well, thanks. Week two of our World Cup coverage.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's gone so fast already, but I've got goosebumps. We are...
You said this last week.
No, this is different.
You're
this time.
You're living in a constant state of excitement at this moment.
It's... Do you know... We will talk about the game. We'll talk about the game on Sunday, but how many of us right now... actually believe we may do all right in this.
I know, but I'm with Gareth Southgate on this. You really, really need to rein that in because just because we're doing a little bit better than expected,
we've got to remember
our track record in knockout games.
Yes, but we've got a team that is proving themselves to be World Cup winners of the future. That is for sure.
I do think we're getting all very excited because we smashed Panama. But that was kind of always going to happen. It was their first ever World Cup.
It should have happened. It should have happened by that many goals. We did, but it should have happened the way it did. But the fact is, you know, we saw a ruthlessness to England that was missing in the first game. A ruthlessness and I would say a clinical edge that I haven't seen in an England team for years. And we saw that with this team. And I don't know where I read it, but listening to some commentators a little while ago, and they were saying, with each game, this young team are going to grow in confidence.
Oh, God, yeah.
And we are seeing already in just the next game, in just one game.
Yeah.
I think our biggest sign to see how well we are going to do will be this Thursday's game with Belgium, because Belgium are a team. You know, we're through anyway. That's fine.
Well, and that is where it might become a bit of a psychological battle, especially with some of these younger guys, because I do think the younger guys as well have a little bit more arrogance sometimes and feel a little bit more invincible. And it is really important to remember that just because we're through doesn't mean that we can go into this game thinking... it doesn't even matter, because that is really psychologically damaging.
Yeah, I don't think our players are going to be thinking that, because it is important that we do win out of our group. Like, we are through to the last 16.
Is it though? Because
yes.
This is what everyone started to talk about now. Maybe it'd be better tactically to finish second in our group.
No, I think if we get the top, then we're going to... kind of technically, we will get easier teams to play against. If we become second, it's going to be a lot more difficult.
That's not what they're saying. So at the moment...
I mean, all to tell who's going to get through.
I mean, yeah. But route one at the moment, if England finish top, one possible route to the final is the last 16, they play Senegal. Now, Senegal aren't particularly
a strong team.
However, route two, if England finish runners-up, their possible route is Japan. Oh, I think I've just contradicted myself.
Yeah. It's fine. But then we still don't know exactly, obviously, what's going through, but it'll be...
Well, why are people suggesting this?
It'll be good for us to top the group. So then technically, well, you know, we would potentially get easier games. Again, you never know, because it's all down to that one game. But, you know, let's look at England. You know, let's look at Kane, first of all. You know, Kane scored a hat-trick. He's now top goal scorer of the tournament, with both Romelu Lukaku and Cristiano Ronaldo on four goals. And it says here, Kane is only the third England English player to score a hat-trick at World Cup after Jeff Hurst and Gary Lineker. Kane, during that game, was world-class.
Yep.
He kept his cool. He's
had a couple of real brilliant games, actually. He's really coming forward as the captain that England needed and really tying together this young team.
Yeah, he is. He's a leader. He's someone that is really proving himself. You know, I think with me, like, and I suppose many people, when it came into looking at our team going out to the World Cup, because they were so young, it's like there's no experience. What are they going to do?
It almost felt like a gamble.
Yes.
Because it wasn't tried and tested at all. We just didn't know. But they are proving themselves, and they're proving that not only do they have the real standout players, but they're also, their set pieces are very good, and they've obviously been trying, you know, to work as a team, which is as you want. But
yes,
sometimes there is a worry because you've got players coming through from different club sides, and there is a bit of competition, and they're used to playing against each other.
They are. I think this is going to be, well, like I said, let's see how they keep their cool playing against a team like Belgium. I'm very excited. You know, you've got John Stones. He scored two from centre-back. Obviously, you've got Trippier. That,
which was not expected whatsoever.
Not at all. He's, again, John Stones, someone that is proving himself. He's gaining confidence. Mm. And, you know, when you look at the team, it was an easy game. But how, again, they're keeping their cool, their style, their pace. England set pieces, again, are very good. Scored both goals against Tunisia, plus four, including the clever free kick against Panama. Just reading my notes here. It's disappointing. I mean, second half, we did concede.
But it was a record-breaking result. I mean, I'm not sure how long it's been, but it has been an awfully long time since a team got five goals in the first half.
And do you know what I thought was quite wonderful is when Panama got that goal, it was like they won the World Cup.
Yeah.
It was them cheering, them celebrating. It was literally like, but guys, come on.
I mean, that is a huge,
anyway.
But it's a huge result for them, though, because this is the first time they've actually qualified for the World Cup. And
yeah,
presumably it can only go up from here. And to actually get a goal against a team which is looking bloody world class and actually may well, I mean, touching a lot of wood here, but may well make
touch it
through
it, touch
the
it.
Knockout stages. I can't find any words. It's granite.
You know, I'm getting very squealy, but we do. When you looked at that team, and I would say their performance was faultless. And, you know, we have players that kept their cool, that showed that we could get through quite a few. I'm looking forward to seeing us in the knockout stages. We've got to keep our cool, the pressure. I mean, we'll talk about the games going on at the moment and this evening. But when you look at teams like, say, I don't know, we'll see what happens with Argentina, with Brazil. We could.
Yeah.
I mean, what if we go on and win? I mean, we won't, but you never know. I'm dropping that gauntlet.
Following on from last week, there's been quite a few key teams failing to impress. Portugal and Spain separately last night had a bit of a mare.
They did. Actually, before we go on and talk about the other teams, shall we play some highlights of that England game?
Always.
We'll be back in a few moments.
That's a header for John Stones that's gone in. As easy as you like. John Stones hammers it home. Here's Lingard. Lingard in behind before being swamped, and it is a penalty. Two came in, Torres and Escobar. Lingard went down. And it is Harry Kane looking to score for a fifth successive England match.
I'll tell you what, Gomez is making the point of trying to put him off.
Two goals at the 2018 World Cup for Harry Kane. Oh, how emphatic was that? Two goals for England against Panama. And Harry Kane set about taking the net apart. Young. Lingard. Sterling. Jesse Lingard. Jesse Lingard! Fires in a quite beautiful third for England. Henderson breaks out and puts the ball in. And it's a cross for Sterling. For England, scored by their number five. This could be a record-breaking day.
Harry Maguire, who keeps being held, Loftus-Cheek as well.
Larry Kane's having a cuddle. Look.
And Harry Kane goes down. It was Murillo with him as Pinedo catches. And the referee's given it.
Yeah, it was a penalty. It's Harry Kane. He's been held the whole time.
Here's the chance for a second for Harry Kane. Same place. Same result. Yeah. What a result for England before the break. This is unbelievable. England 5, Panama 0. Harry Kane puts himself level with Cristiano Ronaldo and Romelu Lukaku as top scorers at this World Cup. Look at arrows one into the feet of Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Loftus-Cheek shot deflected. Harry Kane's got another goal. He didn't know much about that one. He's got a hat-trick in a World Cup for England. Joining Sir Geoff Hurst, joining Gary Lineker. Played in, and it's scored! Panama have their goal! Avia with the free kick. And it's the old man of the team, the oldest in their squad, Felipe Baloy, who has given their fans that moment. England will have much tougher tests than this to come, but England have passed this one with flying colours. All the damage done in an exhilarating first 45 minutes. Everything the England captain touches turns to goals right now, and the country, with every game that passes, is going that little bit more wild about Harry. England 6, Panama 1.
I mean, just hearing that, England 6.
It does give you chills.
Oh, it really gives you chills. And after that game, Gareth Southgate, he threw a World Cup party for the players to celebrate, obviously, reaching the knockout stages. And Southgate then urged his aces to finish the job with a big win over Belgium to top Group G. Maybe it is typical of us England supporters. I've got here Abby, our producer. But did they drink alcohol? Wait there. I will tell you the answer to this.
No, surely not.
As his players sank a few pints. Yes, they did. Oh. But they've had a couple of days off. So we're going to give them that, boys.
Yeah, when they have days off, they should take them because they're going to have a very, very quick turnaround after this group stage into the knockout stages. And I think this is what we were talking about earlier. Some people have been saying that one route versus the other route, whether or not they come top of the group, will give them days off. And the days off that they have are few and far between.
And it is important, obviously, to get that. Do you know what, right now, can we just give our players everything they want? So then, hopefully, I am excited, but you just never know. And you mentioned there as well, Uruguay topped, moving on to the other teams, Uruguay topped Group A, winning all three games. They will play Portugal in the last 16. Now, Portugal drew with Iran last night in a game littered with loads of VAR controversy. Now, we are going to be talking a bit later on to Keith Hackett, who's a former professional referee, and he has a lot of passionate words about VAR, and I don't know if he's for or against it.
Well, there's been an interesting array of players who've come out for and against it, so I will be interested to hear what he has to say, because from a referee's point of view, either it could be what they've been waiting for and it's an absolute godsend, or it's a huge pain in the arse.
What do you think? From a viewer, from a fan, from a person looking in, and you're a rugby fan as well.
I am, and it is used in rugby. But the thing is, in football, there is such a high tendency for things to be challenged. And actually, it's creating just as many problems as it's solving. So last night, for example, there were two questionable calls. Ronaldo was subject to a lengthy red card review over swinging an arm on an Iranian player, but he got off it and he just got the yellow card. Now, had that not been for VAR, he might well have been shown the red card, but then also it happened in Portugal's in Iran's favour. So if it's that balanced, it doesn't really seem to warrant it. And these lengthy stops, players cooling down, surely we're going to be getting into more injuries. At the moment, I think the VAR is being used as a tool-ish, but they're using it very carefully.
They are, and I just, I mean, I don't think it's working. And again, it's funny when you talk to different people in the industry, different fans. It is literally 50-50. I think so far, I mean, when you watch that first game, England's first game in Tunisia, how they treated Kane and how that wasn't even spotted. Mm. Yes, there's always going to be controversy around VAR, and I think we're going to have this for a while until us, the fan, gets used to it. And also, I think the one thing is, I think the players need to know more about it, because they have been very open, when, especially some of the England players, saying we still don't know exactly, we haven't
and
been
educated
about it. And
the trouble is, so they are
it.
Still just appealing everything that happens. And actually, if it is this sort of big brother feeling, if they are just watching, I mean, well, they're clearly not, because as you say, they really should have picked up on what was going on to Kane in our first game. But if it's being watched from elsewhere, fine, but just it has to be consistent. And the trouble is that there is always human error. It is not artificial intelligence. It is just another group of referees a little bit further away.
Yeah, we've got here from presenter Des Kelly on Twitter. All this whining about VAR is ridiculous. It's like blaming CCTV for a burglary. If a referee watches a replay and still makes a bad decision, then that's down to the competence of the official, not the review system. VAR, hashtag VAR, hashtag World Cup 18.
It is really difficult because we've got all this good technology, and yes, we absolutely should go with the times and we should be using the technology, and we are used to not using it, and therefore that is probably why we're having a bit of a difficult time coming around to it. But there just seems to be so many flaws in the system right now.
And I think we've had so far quite a record-breaking amount of red cards, so therefore penalties in this World Cup, and that's obviously as a result of VAR being used. So again, it's, I don't know, I'm not liking it. I mean, obviously, everyone's like, Downey, do you like it or not? Well, if Downey doesn't like it, then I don't. I'd like to see, by the end of the World Cup, how that turns around. But at the moment, I think it's just not being used properly. Russia finished second in Group A after losing to Uruguay, as we mentioned. They will play Spain, who scored a last-minute equaliser to draw with Morocco. Right now, we've got Australia, who are currently playing Peru, and Denmark are currently playing France in Group C. I think it's all still 0-0. I will find out. And tonight, we'll see if Argentina can stage a comeback and get out of Group D. They need to beat Argentina, and I hope Croatia draw or beat Iceland. Messi could be out of the World Cup. Obviously, Messi playing for Argentina. This could be, well, Messi's last World Cup. He could be out. Nobody expected Argentina to face an early flight home from Russia. They will do their best, obviously, to beat Nigeria. I mean, Nigeria's, it says in the press today, Nigeria star Brian Idowu has said that the Super Eagles will finish Lionel Messi's international career. The Argentina legend seems unlikely to continue if his side are knocked out, having already retired in 2016 before being convinced to return. Messi is 31. He needs to inspire his side to reverse their awful World Cup form. I mean, imagine if Argentina were knocked out tonight. That would be crazy. And it'd be crazy not to see Messi on a World Cup stage before. I would love to see Nigeria go through. I really, really would. I think it would be great. Basically, Group D scenarios going on right now. Argentina must beat Nigeria. They've then got to hope Iceland do not beat Croatia. Croatia, who are already through. If Iceland do win, Argentina can still pit them by winning their game by two more goals than the World Cup. I would like to see Nigeria go on and win. I think it would be quite beautiful. And imagine that. No more Argentina.
I know. I mean, there have been some real shock results at the moment in this World Cup. We are only 2 weeks in, and we've now got a game currently going on between France and Denmark. It's 0-0 at the moment, okay. And the winner will, of course, finish top of Group C. Other games, Peru are currently beating Australia 1-0, but neither will go through to the knockout stages. So that's an interesting psychological battle, actually. So you're really going for pride there, whether or not your team wins, just in almost a standalone game, because it no longer matters.
Yeah, and again, when you know you got through, I get maybe same with Belgium. You rest some of your best players just so they're stronger for the next round. So obviously, then that's when the World Cup gets quite exciting. We mentioned very quickly, actually, Messi, 31 years old. This could be the last time he's on an international stage. I've got a list of the oldest players that have ever performed, for want of a better word, played at a World Cup. Do you want to hear this list very quickly?
Yeah, I do. I really do.
Wish me luck with pronunciations, brace and my horse teeth. Here we go. Right. We've got... Okay. Really? SML Hadary, he plays for Egypt. He's 45 years old. He's playing in this year's tournament. Well,
45.
Was playing. 45.
Wow.
Farid Mondragon, who's Colombian, in 2014 was 43 years old. Roger Miller from Cameroon, 42 years old. He played in 94. Pat Jennings, Northern Ireland, he played in 86. He was 41 years old. And Peter Shilton, obviously our Peter Shilton, back in the 90s, was 40 years old. So 45 years old. So there's no excuse me for being tired.
That is an astonishing age. But we have got someone quite considerably younger on the phone lines who we are going to have a quick chat to. Chelsea Grimes. Hello, are you there?
Hello. I am indeed. Hello.
Hello, Chelsea. How are you today?
I'm fine. I've actually got the Denmark-France game on right now. So.
Oh, is it? And can you tell us what how's the game so far?
Well, I'm actually in a rehearsal. I'm rehearsing for a show, so it's just on in the background on mute.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, I haven't been watching too much of it.
That's a multitasking there.
Yeah, it's 0-0, though. That's what I can't tell you.
So what are you rehearsing, Chelsea? Tell us what you've got going on at the moment.
Today's rehearsal, well, I've just been playing some shows. Now I'm back on the road, which has been great. I've been locked in the studio, which what seems like forever, but probably the past like 3 years. I'm playing a show on Saturday for YouTube Music, which I'm super excited about. So yeah, that's what I'm rehearsing for right now. But the football's on, so it's like I'm trying to watch it.
Because you do have a real split loyalty here between football and singing, because of course you are yourself a football player.
I am indeed. I play for Fulham at the minute. But I've played for Liverpool and Everton, Tottenham.
I was going to ask you that because you obviously have a very strong Liverpoolian accent that did not go past my noticing. And you're from Liverpool. What's it like playing for another team? Do you get a bit of banter for that?
Well, I get banter because I'm from Liverpool. I play for Fulham and my name's Chelsea. So,
I mean, it's like,
really
you know,
it out there.
Yeah, that's just banter in itself. But no, it's fun. I manage it like as best as I can. Obviously, the busier music's getting, I'm not making as many training sessions, but the club's super supportive and, you know, they're just excited to see what else goes on in music, really. And I just play as much as possible, but I'm just trying to do it for as long as I can. I'm living the dream right now.
Well, Chelsea, you have written hits for the likes of Dua Lipa, Kylie Minogue, Kesha, Saturdays, to name but a few. How did the music start for you? Has music and football always gone hand in hand? When did it begin?
Well, I played football first. So I started playing football when I was like 9. So 9 to 16, I played for Liverpool. I did go on for a season at Everton, but we won't talk about that. And yeah, it was just, you know, I started singing and writing songs probably about 16 when I just left school. I just fell in love with it, and obviously, you know, the women's game isn't paid the same as the men, so everyone has another career, and I just, you know, started falling in love with music and couldn't make training as much. I got a record deal about 19, and then I stopped playing for about 4 or 5 years, and then like 2 years ago, after the World Cup, a lot of the girls in the England squad I played with at youth level, and I was just like, you know what, I've got to get back into it just for like fun and semi-pro. And then I went on a few trials at Tottenham, West Ham, Fulham, and I got a contract from all of them. So I was like, okay. So yeah, now I'm doing both, and I just can't believe it. I'm loving it.
How do you fit everything in?
Very on a tight schedule. Yeah, it's like I said, you know, if I'm in the studio with another artist, that pays the bills more than women's football at the minute. So, you know, I will miss training if the song's not finished. But usually, you know, I'll be out at 6 o'clock, be a trainer for 8, and I can make it work. So, yeah.
Wow. So you've been quite open about some of the struggles that you've had throughout music. And it says here in 2012, you signed a deal with RCA Records, but before you'd even released a single, you got dropped suddenly. What was the psychological impact of that? Was that really tough for you, or did football become more of an option then?
No, not even. I think, you know, a lot of people said that must have, you know, been crippling. But for me, I think I've just always had the ability to... it's probably come from football, you know, I really do believe that. You know, it's never over. Liverpool were 3-0 down in the Champions League final and they come back and won. So even when I got dropped, it was the worst day of my life. You know, you sign a record deal, you think, oh, that's it, I've made it. you know, 6 months down the line, I got dropped. But it's kind of like football, you know. Yeah. A new manager come in, he didn't sign me. He doesn't like the player. He's let me go. And then it's so crazy because, you know, it's kind of like a Paul Pogba story. Mm. You know, 4 years on, I re-signed to the same label that dropped me for the same, like, for more money.
I love this analogy. It's like going back to the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
In your current debut single, just like that, you do actually show off your football skills. So there's a bit of a crossover there. Was that your idea?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think your first single, you've just got to, you know, I didn't want to take myself too seriously. The song is just a bit of fun. You know, I've got a lot more emotional songs and more, you know, life burden on the record. I thought this is just fun, and I wanted to make sure that people knew that that's a part of me, a huge part of my story. So I was really adamant that we got a bit of football in there. So, yeah, it was good that everyone went along with it and let me do it.
And what do your teammates think about your singing career?
Yeah, they love it. You know, the nice, the single come out. We've got a WhatsApp group, and all the girls were like 4 minutes counting down with me, and it's really cool. Yeah, so shout out to them. I think some of them are listening. So
fantastic!
Yes. Hi, girls.
Hello, girls.
So you have touched a couple of times on the issue of pay and female football teams not getting the support that the men football teams get. Do you think that's changing?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've got a little sister who's 10. And when I was 10, I was the only girl in the whole school in the football team. And now she's like one of four girls just in a year in the team. So definitely growing. Yeah, and it's just, you know, I'll go and watch the women's game and the FA Cup final every year if I can. And it's, you know, the numbers in attendance are growing every single year. So, you know, the game is definitely growing. And I think as a, you know, women's footballer, that's all we can really hope for. As long as it's growing, then we're all doing the right thing.
Yeah, it's very true. And the times are changing. Let's look at the World Cup at the moment. Talking about times changing, England seem to be doing... I mean, I know, we're two games down. What do you think of the World Cup so far?
It's coming home. Come on.
Yes! Let's get excited.
No, you know, I'm loving it. I think Cristiano Ronaldo is just... that against Spain was just, like, one of the best performances I've ever seen from a footballer. You know, it's exciting. Everyone gets behind it. You know, people who don't even like football, everyone's out in the sun. Yeah. And yeah, it's just a good coming together, I think, for the nation and for literally the world. I love it. I love the World Cup.
How well do you think we're going to do? I know that's quite a question.
It's a difficult question for an Englishman, English lady.
Yeah, I think quarters. I think quarters. And I think, you know, possibly... more than that. I'm hopeful.
Ooh.
I'm very hopeful. So.
Yeah, I am. It was a good game. Very, very good game on Sunday. It's a good team. What do you think about the fact that, you know, we do have these youngsters out there? Isn't it great now that hopefully a lot of the Premier League clubs will start following suit very soon, that the younger players coming through and getting into the first team? You know, how important is it to use our homegrown talent?
Oh my God, it's so important. You know, for us, for me growing up or whatever, you know, obviously my favourite player was Steven Gerrard because he's one of our own, and it's so inspiring, you know, to see, oh, France nearly scored then.
Sorry. Good distraction.
But you know, it's so important. You know, you want someone from your hometown and someone from your country to be out there and inspiring the next generation. So I think it's got to be done.
Yeah, it has. Now, we won't keep you on the phone too much longer, but you're performing at YouTube's Music 4 Day in Residence event that kicks off this week. Is that right? Yep.
Yeah, I'm on Saturday. It's at 180 The Strand, and it's free. So all you have to do is go on the website and get tickets, and it's just going to be a great day. You know, if the weather's nice, you can come down and see new artists, and I think there's some special guests and stuff like that. So it's going to be such a good day. I'm performing, I think, between 1 and 3. Okay. So yeah, please come down. Are you guys going to come?
Well, now we are. Yes. Now that we've been invited.
Okay,
we'll see if we can bring the team down there as well. It sounds brilliant.
Okay, awesome.
Thank you, Chelsea. Well, that's what we've got time for. Enjoy the game. We are also going to be playing your song, Just Like That. Very quickly, Chelsea, tell us about Just Like That, and then we'll go from you talking about it to your song. Tell us a bit about it.
amazing. So Just Like That was literally a song I wrote it in like 10 minutes.
Just Like That?
Yeah, literally Just Like That. And I was actually recording another song. I just wrote another song in the studio with the producer. And I just went in the studio, in the booth to record, and I started warming up. And I was just going, And the producer was like, "What is that?" And I was like, "I'm just warming up." And he recorded me, and I literally freestyled the whole thing. We wrote it in 10 minutes. I sent it to the record label, and they were like, "That's your first single." So yeah, skills. It was a little magic one.
Legend, I love amazing. That.
Well, look, Chelsea Grimes, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, girl.
Thank you. And here's your single, Just Like That.
Ooh.
Just like that, you can pull my hair back. Hands on my body, baby, now you got the spotlight. You do it so right every single time. So happy that you're mine, cause you really blow my mind. The neighbors think that we're always throwing parties. We need to keep the noise down when we're being naughty. There's only two of us, it's sounding like an army. Bombs going off when your body's on my body. Just like that, just like that. Keep doing it, doing it. Just like that, just like that, yeah. Oh, I'm losing it, losing it. Don't stop, do it like it's your job. Make the bed rock, lick it like a lollipop. I've been thinking about you all day and about all the ways, like it is your birthday. So as soon as I can get myself back on, and the two of us can get some time alone, talking dirty like we out here on the phone. Hello, 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 hello. Just like that, just like that. Keep doing it, doing it. Just like that. Something crazy, you be mine, I'll be your baby. All that talk, it doesn't faze me. I'll be loving you. We connect like something crazy. You be mine, I'll be your baby. All that talk, it doesn't faze me. I'll be loving you.
That was Chelsea Grimes. And you know what? It was wonderful listening to someone with, you know, the same amount of passion and excitement for not only football, but for music as well. I like how she is combining it both.
Chelsea seems like the kind of girl that you want to be friends with.
Yeah.
She sounds awesome. I'm reading here that she actually featured some of her mates on backing vocals in the song My Generation. And other songs include one called I Need a Night Out. I mean, it's brilliant. I love everything that she stands for right now. She's my girl crush. Haven't seen her. No idea what she looks like, but...
Oh, I checked out her Insta. She's definitely my girl crush.
She is a good vibe.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chelsea Grimes, for chatting to us just then. Talking about, obviously, women in football, Jason Cundy. Had a few comments on women commentators. Let's just listen to this for a moment.
Personal preference, I prefer to hear a male voice when watching football. For 90 minutes of hearing a high-pitched tone isn't really what I'd like to hear. And when there's a moment of drama, as there often is in football, that moment actually I think needs to be done with a slightly lower voice.
Oh,
Now, one thing, women high-pitched voices. No, I don't think...
I mean, the two are not mutually exclusive.
No, it's like, no offence, Jason, but we did leave the kitchen. I mean, you might be surprised about
and
that.
Hang
we
on.
Do work.
Let's just talk about some of the male football players who've got high-pitched voices. I don't think it is completely unfair. In fact, Jason, would you say we had high-pitched voices?
He's apologised for his comments.
A bit late.
He was called a sexist pig by Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain. And, you know, basically this was all to do with he didn't like the so-called pitch of Vicky Sparks, the first female commentator.
Who's he to make that judgment?
Just the most ridiculous thing. Also, there's been controversy over the role of female pundits and commentators throughout the World Cup so far. Including Enya Luca and Alex Scott being pundits on ITV and BBC. Now, how many England caps have they got so far? And then we look at some of the male commentators. How many England caps have they got? You can't compare. It's the most ridiculous, ridiculous comment ever. That, you know, why are we having? I mean, Jackie Oakley has been speaking about this. Why do we have to defend ourselves yet again? Mm. You know, just because you're female doesn't mean you're not as knowledgeable, if not more, as a guy on any subject, on any topic. And it's not only that, it's the fact that I think a lot of men are conditioned to have these points of views. They think, because they've grown up with men, male commentators, male presenters, watching men's football, they are conditioned over those years to have these views. When actually, he's hoping that the men going through now, growing up now, watching females high up in the FA, female commentators and women's football, that will become a thing of the past.
It's not just conditioning, though. It does seem to be genuine opinion. There's been some real patronising behaviours, actually, during the World Cup, on air. Patrice Evra
clapped an opinion
by Enya Aluko on ITV last week. I mean,
yes, that was it. Yeah.
Clapped. You would never do that.
It's the most condescending, horrendous. And I think this shows you how far we've still got to go for women in football. It's
at least the girls are there. They're there. But now,
and they're doing an incredible job
as well. And they know what they're talking about. And like you say, they are quite often much more highly
skilled,
qualified
yes.
for the job than the guys are.
Yeah.
But now it's a case of educating the guys that we're just as good as them.
In some cases, better.
Infinitely better. Well, Jason Cundy has apologised on Twitter. He tweeted saying, "I want to sincerely apologise for the comments I made on Good Morning Britain. I came away realising just how foolish, odd choice of word, and out of order they were, and how I deserved the backlash I have received." I mean, that is a very media-friendly mm-hmm. quote. Total publicity stunt, in my opinion.
Yeah, he also said there are times when you have to hold your hands up and admit you are wrong and have been an idiot. And this is definitely one of those times. I regret the comments and also the hurt and anger they caused. I realise there is absolutely no place for these demeaning attitudes towards female commentators. And I'm truly sorry. If you were sorry, you would never have said it in the first place. Mm-hmm. I'm actually very quickly, or wondered if my producer could do this. So we could look at what Jackie Oakley tweeted, if possible, in response to this, or just see what some of the female commentators have tweeted in response to this, because it's so old-fashioned.
It's boring now, actually. Why does it matter what the sex is of the person doing the job? Increasingly, we are able not to stereotype in other workplaces. Why is it that sport is still so dominated by men, and why are we allowing it to still happen?
Yeah. But hopefully, it's the fact that he's come forward and apologised like this. The fact that people like Lilica have commented about how ridiculous it was.
I don't think he's apologised for the opinion. I think he's apologised for the backlash.
Because he was caught out. Yes, yeah. Exactly. But everyone has pretty much mocked him for what he has said. Let's be honest, I don't think people really respect Jason Cundy, Blues News presenter nowadays. ITV reporter and presenter Jackie Oakley responded on Twitter, writing, "Frustrating that this female commentator debate is still such an issue 11 years after my first Match of the Day game and 8 years after I did 7 live World Cup commentaries on 5 Live. Voice style preference is always subjective. To say it shouldn't be allowed says more about the critic." Exactly. Done. I think that says it
sums it up, really.
Yeah, he just obviously doesn't.
It's incredibly frustrating and rude and condescending, but I suppose in the same way with playground bullies, you got to feel sorry for the instigator. They are cowardly, and he's probably fighting to protect his own job, quite frankly.
And to be honest, I actually quite like the fact that this is out there and we are talking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's made people realise even more how ridiculous it is that there's not more females out there commentating, presenting, playing football, being a manager, being a coach. It's actually... So, Jason, actually, thank you very, very much.
Yeah.
I think you'll probably do...
quite unintentionally.
More good.
Helping us here.
Yeah, you'll do more good than harm. So thank you very much indeed. Thanks, I doff my cap to you. There we go, Jason.
Ish.
I doff it, then, yeah, drop it. Right. Moving on very, very swiftly on the phone lines right now is a former professional referee and author, Keith Hackett. Keith, welcome to the show.
Oh, delighted to be on.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today. Very quickly, actually, before we talk about you, refereeing, VAR, what did you think about Jason Cundy's comments on women commentators?
Outrageous.
Good.
I think the one thing over the years that we've been lacking, where other countries have not, I'm thinking particularly about America, is first of all developing the women's game as a whole, respecting the women that play, respecting the women that officiate, because we've had, when I was PGMOL, we had one or two women referees coming through the system that were really outstanding. And when I listen to the commentators, I think that they give us a different view. I think there's realism, and I quite enjoy it, because I think at the end of the day, their homework is thorough, their knowledge about the game is thorough. And, you know, we go back to people like Jackie Oakley, who, if you like, broke the glass ceiling.
Yeah.
And now, following through, we've got others. And for me, it's a little too late. I think we've got to get more to get a balance into what we're listening to. And I think this is the way we attract women into the game, girls into the game, you know. I watch a lot of junior football. My grandsons play football every Sunday morning. I go and watch them. And the number of women that are standing on the touchline, watching the game, encouraging their family, and picking up the knowledge of the game is terrific. So he's way out of order. And I think he's recognised it too late,
Yeah.
to be honest.
Yeah, he has, of course, taken it back, but it's still out there. That's the thing. You can't unhear that. And it is an opinion that really ought to be kept quietly to himself, I think.
Well, I don't think he should have those thoughts. I think at the end of the day, you know, I've watched the Olympics, I've watched cricket, I've watched football, and I'm not being condescending here. The progress in women's sport over recent years is terrific. And, you know, we're following certain countries like America. In the 80s, I refereed a few women's games out in America, and the quality of football that was played, the tactics that were applied, were terrific. Mm. So, you know, move on. And I hope that his response, if you like, of apology, is taken in the way that he's given it, and that others will refrain from making similar comments.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Perfectly said.
Well, Keith, you are, of course, a former professional referee and an author, and you are counted amongst the top 100 referees of all time in a list maintained by the International Federation of Football, History and Statistics. Well, that is one of the longest titles I've ever given someone. So there's a lot going on at the moment in the World Cup around VAR.
Yeah.
Of course, we want to know your opinion. Is it working? Yeah. Is it worth it?
I think that if you're out in the middle, and I was the boss of the Premier League referees, the professional referees, for a number of years. In my day, we had three cameras watching the referee's performance. In the Premier League, there's 22. At the World Cup, there's 33 cameras every game. There's eight slow-mo motion cameras. There's four super slow motion. And there's two cameras that are specific to the assistant referees. They're all interrogating, if you like, the referee's performance, and it is forensic. There's a balance as to how far it's gone. Now, I'm a great believer in technology. I introduced you know, the technical communication kits, goal line technology. I was the guy who stood up in the Premier League and said, look, this is what we want. And in terms of VAR, the referees need support, because we need to avoid when Maradona punched the ball into the back of the net and the referee and his assistants didn't see it.
Mm.
If that television, I sat in my seat at home and I could see it, and I'm going, oh my God, the referee's dropped one here. Massive. Now, when you look at the errors, and Premier League referees make errors, all referees make errors, I made errors as a referee, invariably, we haven't got the view. So we're not cheating, we just haven't got the view that these 33 cameras bring to the game. So I work on the basis that I'm for VAR.
Mm-hmm.
How VAR is working at this World Cup is bordering on a disaster.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'll tell you why. The first thing is, referees have got to stand up and be counted and understand they are appointed to referee the game. The VAR is there to assist them. The VAR has got a very clear brief when he comes in, and it's on serious and obvious errors. Now we get into the law, and we suddenly go, then I'm watching Harry Kane, and yeah, I'm an England fan like everybody here, and Harry Kane is wrestled to the ground that would be worthy of rugby, but we're not playing rugby, we're playing football.
Yeah, that was horrendous.
And
yeah,
nothing, the VAR doesn't come in. And I'm almost like face up at the screen saying, that is a penalty kick.
Yeah.
I then afterwards wait for the FIFA people to come out and say, look, we've made an error, this is why we've made an error, and then use that error to ensure it doesn't happen again. But I'm now beginning to question the people who are in charge. Now, Kalina, very experienced referee, top referee, right, he's the chairman of the referees committee and also chairman of UEFA.
Hmm.
In his position at UEFA, he's been involved in the decision that says, we don't want VAR.
Oh.
We'll stick with the guys behind the goal. Busaka, who's the director of refereeing for FIFA, Kalina is the chairman of FIFA referees committee. Busaka is a guy who delivered a terrific World Cup performances last time we had the World Cup. The referees did really well. And I think there's conflict there.
Mm.
I think referees are not getting the advice that they require. And then, I'm going on a bit.
No.
We're then in a position, where we're seeing, allegedly, the top referees in the world, the VARs, who are referees in their own right, not applying law correctly.
Yeah. Do you think that actually there needs to be more support for the referees then?
I think that as far as VAR is concerned, it's new.
Mm.
There's a question as to whether it should be used at this World Cup.
Yep.
It should have been tested on a smaller scale.
Well, I think that in fairness, what we had in England was a mess.
Mm.
And therefore, in a way, we're slightly tainted by what happened in England, because how it operates in England was every now and then.
Yeah.
If we look at America, and look, it's not a panacea for 100% accuracy, but what we saw in America was Howard Webb going out to clubs, talking to his referees regularly about how it will operate, interrogating every decision, and then talking to the group of referees saying, look, this is an error, this is where I need to rectify it, and here, VAR, you don't need to get involved in this one. Now, that's clearly, at this moment in time, I don't think, being dealt with in the same way by the referees committee.
Mm.
The reason I make that observation, the evidence to me, is in the Australia game, I think it was, where we had a handball decision, right? It was Denmark v Australia. right? So we had an experienced referee, Antonio Matu. And it's a handball, allegedly. And what they do is, they give a penalty kick. And then last night, Iran, Portugal, the Iran penalty kick, he's never seen handball, right? It's not in the laws, as we see. It's not even any referee in the local parks would not give that decision.
No,
because if they did, they're not applying law.
Yep, I agree.
So let me just bore you a bit, but inform your listeners. When we deal with handball offences, referees receive very clear guidance in the laws. And it says this, the handling the ball involves a deliberate act, right, of a player making contact with the ball with a hand or arm, right? The movement of the hand, right, is towards the ball, not the ball towards the hand. So the ball hit the player's hand arm last night.
And he had no time to get out of the way.
Brilliant, because I was going to say, the next bit is the distance between the opponent and the ball. Is it unexpected? Of course it was unexpected.
Yeah.
And then the position of the hand does not necessarily mean that there is an offence. So we saw a penalty kick not given by the referee. So he's correct.
Yes.
Then the VAR, suddenly the committee, back at the ranch in Moscow, suddenly having a chat, and then suddenly come up with the idea, you better have a look at the screen, because we've got to justify that we're here. This referee goes across and looks at the screen. Now, the one thing that we've not learned from rugby is the rugby will play things in slow motion, which is what happened last night. And then the rugby referees who are really experienced at using VAR will say, play me that at normal speed. And at normal speed, it's not handball. At slow motion, it's not handball. And what we've done is the referee's been put under pressure. He's already not responded to their request to give a red card to Ronaldo. He's judged that as a yellow card offence. And on that one, I don't know why the VAR came in, because it wasn't clear and obvious. And so the VAR's come in. He's rightly turned that one down and stuck with his decision of a yellow card. He then, on this one, goes back and awards the penalty kick.
And
I felt desperately sorry for the referee, who was already having less than perfect game.
Completely agree. So much controversy, isn't there?
And so sorry to cut you off very quickly, because we've not got long left of the show. We've only got a few minutes. Can we just have some final thoughts on England? How far do you think we can go?
Well, I'm the guy who said I don't think we get out of the league bit, the tables. And but I'm telling you.
Positive mental attitude.
I've come across Gareth Southgate. I know how thorough he is. I know what a good man manager is. I saw that when he was at Middlesbrough. I know he's a very good communicator. And we can argue about the teams we played. We played the teams in front of us with some dynamic football. And I've got to tell you, I got sick of getting up off my chair because of the quality of the goals. And of course, I'm sat in Penistone at this moment in time where John Stones went to school and lived. As a lad. In local football, he went to Thurlston School, where my granddaughters go, the same school. He's as normal as anybody. He still comes to watch Penistone Church football when he's got a minute. He supports the club. He's a great guy for the community. Can you guess our thoughts as a community when John Stones not just puts one in, he puts two in?
It must be an amazing atmosphere there.
He's godlike now when he comes back to Penistone.
I can imagine. Okay, well, we do need to round this up, so thank you so much for talking to us, Keith. And all those expertise views on VAR, we feel very, very privileged to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Keith.
Thanks. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
There you go. That's Keith Hackett there, a former professional referee and author. And it's so refreshing to hear that he agrees with what we were saying as well about VAR, that during this World Cup, it's not actually happening for VAR at the moment at all.
Lots of mixed opinions coming through. And if you do want to hear more from Keith, then he is, of course, a columnist for The Telegraph. So, yep, pick up your copy.
Yeah, now we've only got a few minutes left of the show. So I just want to bring one little story to your attention, and it's the Burger King story. Now, Burger King Russia has pulled a World Cup-themed social media campaign that said it would reward women who were impregnated by football players with free Whoppers and up to 3 million Russian rubles, which is £36,000.
This is just disgusting, and it's one of the big reasons that there is so much sexism in this sport. And I think actually our opinion of football and Gareth Southgate's team, they've really tried to stay away from any of the sort of wag stories. Mm-hmm. The girlfriends and the wives, some of them are there, some of them aren't. But they're not making headlines. It's not like Bora Bora back in 2006.
They're doing a great job.
And it is really, really demoralising to see something like this. I mean, surely they have lawyers and people who advise them on this.
And also, it says here, like, obviously it was Burger King Russia that put it up. But surely there's a board with Burger King. How did it...
It should be global.
With a big campaign, surely it's the same board that decide it. So what goes on with Burger King England is the same with Burger King Russia.
Well, no, because if you look at adverts for different brands, they will be different in every territory. But regardless, it's just showing how much more backwards Russia is compared to some other countries, compared to us in terms of sexism. And what a shame that actually managed to be aired before
horrific.
It was pulled.
Yeah, absolutely horrific. And I wonder if anyone actually took it seriously as well.
Like, oh God, I hope not.
I don't. Yeah, it's... And free Whoppers, come on. A baby's worth more than a Whopper.
Oh, I know. Well, England wags are, of course, hoping for privacy at this World Cup. And the FA has retained the services of Farah & Co, which are actually the Queen's solicitors, to safeguard the privacy of wives and girlfriends of England's 2018 World Cup squad. Now, I think this is really positive. We're trying very much to focus, and I know we are talking about them now, but we're trying to focus on the players and what's really happening, what's going on in the world of football, not the wives and girlfriends.
Yeah, it's they're doing a very, very good job. They really are. The wives and girlfriends are staying out of the limelight and making it not about them. Very quickly, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds. We've got the England-Belgium game this Thursday at 7 p.m. Predictions. I'm going to say 3-1 to us.
Really? I think it'll be tighter than that.
Go on. What do you think?
I'd say we might just scrape through on a 2-1.
But we're going to win.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Another story that I really enjoyed was England's excessive security.
I was going to play a song before the end of the show.
I was getting some frantic voice hand singles. I know, we can play a song. Go on, then.
Should we play a song? We'll play a song then instead. We're going to play World in Motion. It's by the New Order. And it's a Christmas song. It's the footy
football song.
So we shall see you next week, same time, same place.
See you later.
Well, some of the crowd are on the pitch.